Welcome to Apple Pie Playground, where we serve up slices of healing for the heart. Stay tuned for a journey of transformation back to the divine inner child. Can you come out and play today?
Welcome, everybody, to Apple Pie Playground. I'm your host, Valerie. I am so grateful to share special time together today. And thank you so, so much, BBS, for being here with us. We're so grateful for you. We are in the wake of our equinox, friends, and lots of astrological alignment going on. And I want to dedicate this show to our evolution and spirit as we pass through heaven's door of equinox and we begin to create for our lives only those things that bring us joy and offer passion. You know, it's our world to shape now, friends. We are being liberated more and more every day. It's hard to tell out there in such a crazy, messy kind of play out on the world stage right now, but it is true transformation for this reality we're co-creating. And we'll talk about that. And the best teaching I have ever learned for the liberation of our spirits from the suffering of our physical experience as humans, we'll talk about that too. It is not a teaching for the faint of heart, but it's very powerful, very, very powerful. And you know, I have been wrestling with something of a wily mind lately. And what I realize is frustration is a dead giveaway that not all the aspects of ourselves are working together for our best interest. And it's usually an indicator that a belief or beliefs are being contradicted somewhere in our human process. And we're mixed up about it somehow. And it means we could really use a little quiet and contemplation and clarity, right? When we start feeling that frustration come in. Does that make sense? And everything really about our existence is basically paradoxical. And that's the definition of duality, actually, of polarity. And I can give you plenty of examples. Let me give you an example. It's what has us compelled to do bad things that feel so good for us, right? That's our duality coming out. And what has us hating people that we really, really love, right? And it's what has us feeling completely separated from God, who is basically us, right? Those kinds of things that show up in our duality, and we suffer because of that kind of stuff, don't we? We are essentially a set of competing ideas in one body, right? We're a host of opposing perceptions. We're physical containers, really, with gazillions of sensory receptors, and they're all affirmatively trying to get a grasp on this physical world and trying to do it as a spirit would do it. That's a thing, right? And sometimes that's a real mess. It's our physical nature, right? And we talk about it a lot, that our true goal is to harmonize what's going on physically with a spirit who wants to, you know, feel at home in its own skin, right? That's the goal. And that's not easy right now. And it's true that things are getting pretty wild out in the world. They'll get wilder. They'll get wilder. And my best recommendation is to sort of retreat from the world's news as much as you can. Retreat from that front page news, right? Get off that phone a little bit. It's a narrative set in motion to wake us up when our own practices aren't doing the trick, right? When our own work isn't quite doing the trick. The story's going to get as crazy as it needs to get, really, to get us all on the same page about, you know, what's been something of a dark reality for us and how to evolve out of that. The idea is to get us all moving in the same direction toward healing and a little bit of enlightenment and our human evolution, right? And for those of us who can do the inner work, let's take every advantage to do that. Let's take up that challenge. Our inner work is something of a golden elixir for those around us, right? It's an alchemy of transformation, not just for ourselves, but that energy goes everywhere, right? That shared field of energy that we exist in, it becomes powerful when we energize it. So let's take up that challenge, right? And what a gift and what good work to keep ourselves aligned as others are trying to find their own paths in the same direction. And it's harder for some than others, right? And we will be gentle with each and every person that crosses our path, and we will offer compassion and empathy, especially in times like these. We never know the inner dialogue of a person. We never know the inner self that a person may be hiding, and the projection of that individual may be entirely different than what's really inside. So compassion is key, right? You are the guide, each and every one of you. You are a cosmic docent, so to speak, the key to a new world. You're sort of showing others to their seats, right? As the curtains to this cosmic show starts to open. You're the anchors of ascending energies. You better believe it, right? Own it. Own it. And this week, I heard somebody say, you signed up for the job, so get to it, right? And I thought I would repeat that. Right, I think it's worth remembering and worth repeting, and it is a job we will take up, right? We will take up our good work. And like I was saying last week, my body, mind, and spirit were not playing nice together, and I sort of had to go in and break up the fight and investigate what was going on. And it turns out I had allowed a belief to come in and make a mess of things. And it was something of a, like a bull in a, you know, in a china shop. That's what a belief will do to the inner workings of a mind. It wreaks havoc on the spirit, who is literally trying just to find a little release from the ego mind, right? That's really what our spirits are trying to do, is just to get a little space, right? Get a little space away, find a corner somewhere. And I was reminded that the end game here is really all about peace, friends. It really is all about peace, and such a triumph. Every single minute of peace that we can carve out for ourselves is a beautiful expression of our success, and we don't want to forget that. Unfortunately, a belief system is not a very durable thing, and it has to be constantly reinforced, which our brain is completely prepared to do, right? And so are our social networks and our families, probably, and the social control systems that we are part of, and the religions that we're part of, and the schools that we go to, and the relationships that we have. So we get a lot of reinforcement of beliefs, but I think it is in large part because they're not very durable. And they're not very stable. And let me try to prove that to you a little bit. It isn't very good for sustaining peace in the body to have belief systems. And how do I know that, right? I mean, how could I tell you that I know that? Well, every time we find ourselves fearful or worried or frustrated, right? We've started questioning beliefs somewhere in our thinking. Okay, that's what we're doing. There's a belief somewhere being tested. It's being tested. It's being put through the process, right, of our experiences and our memories and what we know and our habits. Okay, that's what's going on. And there's something in there being threatening, right? Threatening the mind somewhere. And that's because beliefs are not intrinsic to a spirit. In other words, spirits don't create beliefs or a belief system, right? A spirit doesn't use a belief. So when we hear somebody say, "I believe dot dot dot," we're really watching ego pushing buttons to force a situation to make sense. That's really what we're hearing when somebody says, "Well, you know, I believe dot dot dot." We know that that's the ego functioning as part of the mind to maintain a particular identity through whatever ideas are coming into a conversation that needs to be defended, right? Now, spirit, on the other hand, is guided by a singular truth, right? A singular truth. And beliefs are essentially alternatives to a truth. So that one universal truth that spirits are continually trying to communicate to us, beliefs are essentially alternatives to that, as yet undiscovered, right? And the thing is, if we're not careful, we fill in the blanks to our knowing with what? With beliefs. That's what we tend to do. If we aren't quiet and still and we don't arrive at a knowing in a way that is direct experience with that knowing, and we don't feel like we've got the entire answer or the complete understanding, chances are, rather than sitting there and continuing to receive and allow and those sorts of things, we will choose instead to kind of just fill the parts of that knowing that we don't quite have in yet with beliefs, right? We just kind of chunk in those beliefs to kind of fill in the dots. That's what we do. It kind of makes a mess. And, you know, that's what we do. We'll find that our beliefs fall away the more universal truth that we're able to integrate into our beingness. So if we can sit with not being sure or not exactly knowing and allowing that knowing to kind of fill in the pieces as we go, we won't be so quick to kind of fill in the unknown with beliefs that kind of bandage, you know, our good work as we're trying to understand something or fill in the blanks. Now, beliefs, and we've talked about this before, beliefs are what happens when the mind combines thoughts that are repeated enough times to condition the brain into a mental habit, right? Generally reinforced by behaviors and emotions. Right? And these things correspond to behaviors. And then thought patterns that reinforce perception or a point of view about an idea. All of this is going in there and spiraling in to reinforce thoughts that a mind is trying to make sense of, right? The process is basically operant conditioning for human brains, Right? Only we do it to ourselves, right? We don't need the treats to do it. We just somehow the ego is able to get that going and to do that ourselves. The thing about beliefs is that they're bandages for conflicting information, right? Like we talked about, that allows the brain to keep functioning without a threat to the nervous system, right? So it kind of fills in the blanks, fills in the holes, and keeps on going, right? That's what beliefs do. And our mind likes it so much that we habituate it. We habituate it. If a belief works, we just keep using it because it's easier than not, right? It's easier than not using it. The body will tend to prefer the path of least resistance, okay? So the brain is encouraged to prefer a false belief to a difficult truth. Does that make sense? It's sort of a matter of survival, right? It's a matter of the autonomous nature of the brain and what it prefers to do when it's just on autopilot, which is probably more than we would want it to be. And the ego is self-sustaining that way. It sort of maintains a self concept. And we talk about this all the time. It maintains a sense of identity, okay? And works really hard to maintain that stasis in the brain, right? Remember, it's accumulated data over pretty much a whole lifetime that helps it predict and control our reactions, right? That's a lot of input and a lot of habit. And the ego works to validate a reality that it's created over a lifetime. And we basically end up with self-fulfilling prophecies, right? And attachments that reinforce the ego and a lot of limiting beliefs, a lot of limiting beliefs, right? And the mind's number one goal is to create safety and reinforce that feeling, right? With predictability and dependability. Beliefs offer everything the ego mind needs as a self-reinforcing identity. Do we see that? And no, we're not saying egos are bad, but we have them, right? They are a part of this brain system that we have. They're just not natural to spirits, and therefore they're sort of problematic. And that's just an observation, right? That's just an observation. What an ego experiences as beliefs is generally the opposite of what a spirit experiences as truth, right? So again, we're in this duality, which is sort of a fascinating thing for us. And remember, we are on the path to wisdom together. So searching for truth through our values and experiences means learning to ask the right questions. So we're not going to be afraid to do that, right? With wisdom comes understanding of our universal truths. And the thing is, belief systems get in the way of universal truths so much of the time. We get lost in something of a dark forest of illusion when we adopt beliefs, right? Which don't even belong to us, actually, right? We're not born with beliefs. We have zero beliefs when we're born. Our spirits don't have beliefs. We have zero beliefs when we're born. Much of our belief system is institutionalized, right? In every way we can imagine. It's really the beginnings of a soft mind control for us in the modern age. And, our beliefs are pressed upon us from an early age, and it's called assimilation in many different places. Many beliefs are handed down to us over time. They're cemented in the mind by what our physical world conjures up or rationalizes or perceives, right? It only matters because beliefs won't ever replace truth. Okay? beliefs will never get us to the universal truth. It doesn't happen that way. They just won't. And I want to share why. Okay, I want to convince you of why. Starting with an idea that may not seem readily associated with the topic at all, right? Or maybe it is, and we just don't realize it. But I want to talk about what happens when we find ourselves feeling less than enlightened in our spiritual or energetic practices. Right? When we work really hard to do all the right things for an aligned kind of life and we just aren't feeling it, right? We come up empty, we feel crummy, we feel numb maybe. We don't feel anything. And there are a lot of us out there sitting on empty after a hard day's work or after a meditation session, for example, or you know, after a week's worth of prayer or doing our manifestation work, right? And it just doesn't make sense anymore because we're not really seeing positive changes. You know, all that stuff. So many of us aren't feeling growth or alignment or peaceful or loved. We aren't feeling it. And so our brains do that thing, right? That thing that it does, it attaches a belief to our frustration, right? Right there in our meditation. We take a deep breath, we're frustrated, and here come the beliefs, right? Here come the beliefs. Because a belief is going to help the brain get a handle on the problem. Get a handle on the problem, or what we think the problem is, right? Which isn't the problem at all, right? It isn't the problem at all. The problem is that we are in a moment where we are needing to get quiet, and instead we're just sort of filling in that silence with a belief system so we can move on, right? So I see a lot of nihilism out in the world today. It is everywhere. Our younger generations are experiencing a lot of nihilistic tendencies. And what's interesting about that is the tendency for nihilism to sort of creep in at turning points in human consciousness, right? And when you look at ways to compare nihilism to modern movements of awakening, what you see is sort of a comparison to the black pilling of a population, right? Those folks who were moving toward positive change, who somehow lost a meaningfulness in the experience, and we know those folks. Hey, there are hard days, there are tough days, right? There are tough days out there in truth or land, right? These are folks who have asked why so many times without reasonable answers that they've sort of decided that no answer to that question would matter much anymore anyway. Do we understand? And we hear the term black-pilled all the time in the truther movement, don't we? So what is nihilism anyway? And what could it possibly have to do with our weekly meditation session, for example? Or the prayers at our kitchen tables? Or the way we try so hard to find bliss in our conscious awareness and it's hard to find and forget about it in evening traffic? Or, wow, after that meeting went so badly at work, never mind bliss. Or after that argument at home with a loved one, just never mind, right? And enough of that can just move us on into just a numbness that has us saying, I can't find an answer to why. I just can't find an answer to why. You know, nihilism was a term originally used to describe a philosophy of life as being a measure of nothingness, right? without intrinsic value or merit whatsoever. Okay? Just, you know, life just had literally no intrinsic value. There was no inner expression that could produce value in a person's life experience. Okay, that's pretty much a traditional explanation or definition of nihilism. So just to explain a little bit, nihilists don't see the world as a bad place necessarily, but they don't see the world as a good place either necessarily. They see the world as a place that is relatively absurd, right? As a physical experience. It doesn't make sense. Okay? Nihilism is centered around the idea that our collective physical experience lacks a higher purpose, right? It lacks a higher purpose. There's no rhyme, there's no reason to being alive, right? And the question of why just lacks value because there's no answer that we could give that would satisfy us anymore. That is the nihilist view, right? It's the idea that we're just here as an experience, and it's paradoxical at best, which is a way of saying it's dualistic, right? We have lows that hinder the highs and vice versa. It's an experience of opposites, right? A purely happy life can't be attained. A purely sad life can't be attained because we can't really control the outcomes that affect human life. So many nihilists begin to see the world as absurd after a while. Nothing makes sense, and little is predictable, so there's really no way to build in meaning, right? And we can ask why, and the belief systems don't work too much anymore, but we don't have anything to replace that, right? We're not going within to replace that. And so we can't produce an outcome that's meaningful. And life is absurd, generally, right? Life is absurd. So think about that. How many times have we said to somebody, life is just absurd, right? Can you believe it? This is just absurd. Or, you know, this just doesn't make sense. And I don't know why. Right? I don't know why. Now, when philosophers use the word absurd, it generally means that we're subject to an unpredictable physical experience, right? Which becomes meaningless because it can't be qualified. We can't place a value on it, so to speak. And moreover, we are imposed on by a universe that is basically indifferent to our situation. If there is a God, that God just really doesn't seem to care, right? It's a hands-off situation out there with source creation. So let's think about this not as human beings, okay? Let's think about this as co-creator spirits in human bodies. Okay, let's think about this as spirits who don't ask why, who don't have limiting beliefs, right? That's a different kind of conversation. Do we understand? So if empowered with our remembrance in a higher order of spiritual awakening, our spirits could create whatever we want to, whatever meaning we would want to create in our reality, right? So why would we allow ourselves to believe we are captured by a physicality that would take our sovereignty away, right? Why would we knowingly enslave ourselves in a dark, controlling reality? Why would God do that to us and then, you know, sort of disappear? Right? Why doesn't God care? And what we can notice about these questions is, as a spirit who doesn't ask why, because there's no need to fill in the answer with a limiting belief that soothes an ego mind, all of these contemplations would fall away, right? They would fall away. The very generation of the dispossessed nihilist heart space that doesn't feel anything anymore because they've stopped asking why, because the answers have just become absurd. That particular personality wouldn't have to be in that darkness without an opportunity to feel the spirit expression of a better way. If we could feel spirits doing something completely different, which nihilists can't seem to really get to, and that is having a spirit who doesn't ask why, because it doesn't fill in the blanks with limiting beliefs. And that becomes important for the conversation for today, right? And here's the heart of our inquiry, okay? And it starts with this word, why, right? This word, why. The word, why, is the spark that inflames a belief, okay? The word, why, presupposes something very, very profound, friends. It presupposes that we don't have knowing in the answer, and that somebody will have to give us our knowing of that answer if we get one. And that really sounds too simple an idea to really bother with. We don't know an answer, so we just ask why and we get the answer, right? It's sort of not rocket science. Well, maybe not, but that word, it gives absolutely everything that belongs to us as spirits away to somebody else. It gives everything that a spirit is away to somebody else to answer a question that doesn't even apply to what spirits do. Do we understand, friends? We give ourselves away to teachers, to leaders, to bosses, to churches, to companies, to corporations, right? To court systems, to governments. We give ourselves away in a process that is alien to our spirits, right? And we end up dispossessed of any peace or comfort because our spirits can't go there with what it doesn't ask. And it doesn't fill in the holes with what it doesn't need in these belief systems. Do we understand that? And so folks can go as far as to feel completely void and empty. And that sort of is the expression that we used as the example of the nihilist perspective of an empty life. Instead of doing things that pull in knowing, right? We're giving our knowing away to everybody else. Do we see that? And we call the exchange a belief. Well, why has this happened? Well, it happens because of this. And what we've done is an exchange of a belief system. Does that make sense? So I get it, right? The value in the everyday mechanics of learning information, air quotes, studying to understand a discipline. I get it. How else will we learn a lot of things, right? And I suppose it's more about how we're learning, right? Are we learning from the inside out? I ask why and you tell me the answer. Or are we learning from the inside out, right? I go within and contemplate toward an understanding, and then I try it out, right? I am learning from the inside out as a way that nurtures the spirit and kind of pulls the spirit into that process and into that practice, because the spirit has a lot to offer in that way, and we'll talk about it. The idea is that anytime we say the why word, we're either building a belief, exchanging a belief, or defending a belief that we hope external evidence can resolve for us. Okay, do we see that? But knowing doesn't necessarily require the evidence of anything, right? Our inner knowing doesn't require the external evidence of why questions, because knowing doesn't arrive that way, friends. Knowing does not arrive that way. It arrives in its own perfect timing. And it arrives as that small silent voice coming from within, right? Knowing comes with alignment and conscious awareness in that still quiet voice, in the interface of spirit and the enlightened mind. Right? We are in a receptive state, working from the inside out. When we learn from the inside out, we're relying on our own personal direct experience and, right, and our conscious awareness to offer us understanding and insight. Do we see the difference? We're building wisdom on the path to truth. Do we see that? No beliefs needed, right? No belief system needed at all. And this is a closely guarded secret of the spirit, friends. This idea of avoiding the why of our experiences. And it's a very, very powerful place when we do the internal work. Okay, that prepares us to directly participate in the unfolding of knowing, right? To receive realizations that are free from doubt because they arise purposefully from the inside, from within. Do we see that? There is no doubt in that knowing, and that's because it arrives rather celestially, right? Rather energetically through the spirit as an internal practice. It's a practice of releasing things that no longer serve us and allowing things to unfold rather than forcing them or pushing them, right? We like to push. I know firsthand we like to push. And by observing situations without judgment, right? When we do these things, we are avoiding the why. And that's a beautiful stepping stone directly to our spirits, right? So let me put this in context with an interesting, well, I thought it was kind of a funny, fun, interesting example. I knew somebody in college who took a philosophy final exam, and the question on the final exam was one word. And that word was why. That's it. Why? It's 100-point final exam. And the question was, answer this question, why? And so my friend put down on his paper, because. And that's all he put on the paper, because. And he turned it in. And you know, he got the only A on the exam, right? Can you imagine a whole classroom of students where people filled 2 hours up of a final exam and multiple exam booklets trying to answer the question of why, right? It's sort of a brilliant example of what our minds do that our spirits don't, right? Our spirits just don't conceive of the why, because the nature of truth is it's self-evident, right? Do we see that? It's intuitive. I hope that makes sense. Let's try this out with the why question, okay? And there are lots of them. For example, why would God let something like this happen to me? Right? And the answer usually is, well, because, fill in the blank, right? Or if God really loved me, why am I suffering like this? And so the answer again is going to be some form of because. You see, the answer is never going to be satisfactory because the question is not self-evident. It doesn't come from a knowing. Do we understand that, friends? We ask a lot of questions that are so very, very painful for us, and we do it from a false premise. And that false premise is that a belief system can provide us with the comfort that we need for a mind to make sense of a painful question that causes us to ask why. You see, but we'll never be satisfied because we don't have enough personal direct experience with the situation to understand it from the inside out, right? Within the experience, on the inside, through spirit. So we look for a because answer outside of ourselves and we rationalize as an ego state of mind that asks why? Rather than as a spirit who doesn't need to know why, because there's only one answer to why. And this, again, I told you, it would be a painful lesson, right? But the spirit only needs one answer to why. And you want to know what that answer is? Well, it's the answer to the question, one of my favorite old shows, and it's called Kung Fu, The Legend Continues. And I don't know if you've ever watched it, but it's an old Kung Fu show. But the answer is something of a circular argument, right, that one of the main characters makes in almost every show. And it's always the same when he's asked, well, why are you a cop? Why are you a cop? And he always says, it's who I am, it's what I do, right? And that's the answer. And that's the same kind of answer the spirit is going to give to any why questions. You know, why? Because that's who I am and that's what I do. And it's such a magnificent answer because it really answers every single question of why that you could possibly ask. Now, you may not like that answer. It may not feel good to the ego mind. It may not feel good to the heart who is being told by the mind that we can't release what's painful. And sometimes things are so terribly painful. We just asking why never soothes us, right? It never soothes us. And that's why going to the spirit is so much helpful, more helpful than we could imagine when it comes to finding a connection to our answer to why and what the spirit can actually offer. So what else is there to ask once we answer that particular question with an I am? Right? I am. It's who I am. It's what I do. And the answer lies in the I am, friends. Do we see that? The answer lies in the I am because I am whatever I am is to God. I am what I am at any given time. And whatever that is God. That is source creation living through us. And the definition of God and the great I am become the same. And instead of perpetuating a belief system, right, we get the great I am. And Christ reinforced ancient descriptions of source in the words I am. And incidentally, he avoided beliefs altogether. He absolutely avoided beliefs altogether. He used words very, very carefully to avoid associating ideas with belief systems, okay, purposefully. Now, why would he do that? Because beliefs keep us from truth, okay? Beliefs are barriers to truth. They are barriers to truth. Let me give you an example. Instead of praying to get out of a situation that we believe is bad or sad or unfair, rightfully so, right? Nobody wants to be in those situations, rightfully so. But instead of that kind of prayer, we pray to see the truth of our experience. And that can only come from within, right? Rather than attach to a why and a because belief system cycle, which is what that is, it's a belief system cycle. Folks who have been black-pilled, right, are in this belief system cycle, and they have opted out of any options or any alternatives, and they didn't get to their I am, right? Folks who have given up didn't get to their I am. That's what happens. And it's not too late, right? It's never too late to get to the I am. That we are the I am of our being really is the answer to every single why question that we could ask if we're brave enough to believe that. We experience a physical life to feel the I am in each and every occasion that we have, each event, each meaningful moment, right? Is there for the I am of our beingness. And, you know, something of a fun fact, sometimes I am is interpreted as meaning I will be whatever I will be. And sometimes it's interpreted as I create whatever I create, right? Our power is not to be able to control a physical life. Okay, self-control is super important, but controlling a physical life, nobody can do that, right? Life flows. We can control our intentions. We can control our responses. We can control our I am. Our power is to be able to integrate knowing into our experiences as spirit would do it. And the answer to our why questions would be, because that's who I am. That's what I do. And the answer would allow us to release and let go and accept and strengthen our direct experiences, right, with our inner knowing and our intuition. And we are learning to experience ourselves directly as beings of light energy, right? We are learning to see our world as a connection of cosmic energies in a physical reality. This is our waking, right? And we don't want to be black-pilled with disillusionment because we're borrowing beliefs from outside ourselves. We'd much rather find our I am, right? Why is a question of estrangement that carries us away from our I am? If we must inquire, as human minds do, instead of asking why, ask maybe, what can I know from this? So that we avoid this circular argument of suffering, searching for justification. Do we see that? It's not an easy thing. Right? Not an easy thing, but a very liberating one that we can all benefit from. Right? So I want to switch gears for a few minutes so we can try an expressive activity together. You want to do that? Now, we know that staying connected to our inner child is a really important endeavor. Because the inner child isn't just a spirit born into a body, right? It's a spirit born with a subconscious full of all of the things that we've learned as other incarnations and as spirits who have inner understanding of the way our cosmos actually works. This is recorded in places like the Tao. Right? When we remember things about who we really are as our eternal selves, it comes through our subconscious into the conscious mind. And we have to open to our inner child as a conduit. Does that make sense? Do we see that? It's why doing things, even like reading poetry and singing songs, creates a metaphorical pathway to our subconscious. Do we see that? Metaphor opens the door to our subconscious. You know, when Christ says, "Knock and the door shall be opened," it means a lot of things. And one of those things is to allow ourselves the fullness of what meditation can do as a bridge to the subconscious mind. And remembering who we really are. Now, meditation is contemplation with a purpose, right? We're not trying to go anywhere out into the ether anywhere. We're receiving as meditation. We are receiving as meditation, right? Anything else is something different. We're not channeling when we meditate or contemplate. That's something completely different. We're opening to receive from the ethereal realm, right? From spirit, from source messages only spirit can deliver that bypasses the thinking brain, right? Which is why the subconscious is so valuable. It's a bypassing of a thinking brain that perceives in terms of beliefs, like we said. By the way, the Bible loves to replace the word meditate with the word pray, and it's okay. And prayer becomes something pretty different from what Christ really intended. And, you know, we've talked about that. It's why Christ tried so hard to get people to sort of sit down and get quiet, right? To create space and readiness and flow. So, to receive what source would share. So, remember, things like stories and poetry and music are very powerful triggers for our subconscious minds. And I want to take a minute and test that theory. You want to? Let's decide that we will allow whatever thoughts or feelings or images that come into our minds to come in freely, okay? I'm going to read a little something to all of us, and we're going to let our minds go wherever they want to go. Okay? We won't pull it back or push away ideas. We're just going to let the subconscious show some things today, right, that it may want to show us as I read this lovely poem, which is a song lyric. We're going to allow ourselves to rest in the images that we build with the words that we hear. Whatever arises from a place deep in our subconscious, we are going to allow those to come into fruition and observe, right? It all has meaning. It all has history. It all makes sense to the spirit. And we're not going to judge. We're going to allow our experience. And maybe this week we can continue to contemplate the experience for meaning and understanding and relevance. You want to? Are you ready? Okay. So, feel free to close your eyes, but you don't have to. Just so we can be present with our breath, we'll be ready to receive. And so, let's just take a deep breath in And breathe into our bellies, deep into our bellies. And we'll let that out. And now we're ready to listen. Huff the Magic Dragon by Peter, Paul, and Mary. Huff the Magic Dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honalee. Little Jackie Paper loved that rascal Puff and brought him strings and sealing wax and other fancy stuff. Oh, Puff the Magic Dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honalee. Puff the Magic Dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honalee. Together they would travel on a boat with billowed sail. Jackie kept a lookout perched on Puff's gigantic tail. Noble kings and princes would bow whene'er they came. Pirate ships would lower their flag when Puff roared out his name. Oh, Puff the Magic Dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honalee. Puff the Magic Dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honalee. Dragons live forever, but not so, little boys. Painted wings and giant strings make way for other toys. And one sad night it happened. Jackie Paper came no more. And Puff that Magic Dragon, he ceased his fearless roar. His head was bent in sorrow. Green scales fell like rain. Puff no longer went to play along the cherry lane. And without his lifelong friend, Puff could not be brave. So Puff that mighty dragon sadly slipped into his cave. Oh, Puff the Magic Dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honalee. And we'll stay here with the story for just a couple of minutes and contemplate a little together. Think about it. What did your dragon look like? What did your dragon look like? And who is Puff to you personally? Who is Puff, the Magic Dragon? And where is Honalee? What does this magical place look like to you? And when we think about it, Puff retreated into a cave when Jackie went away. What does that cave represent to you? What does that cave represent? And if Puff the Magic Dragon is a metaphor or a symbol, what would it mean as a metaphor or a symbol for your life? And why did Jackie leave Puff behind? In your own words, why did Jackie leave? And let's put ourselves in place of Jackie. When did we leave Puff behind in our life? When did we leave Puff behind in our life? Is there a way to find Puff again? And how might we find him if we looked? Is there a way to find Puff again? And what's the first thing we might do with Puff once we find him again? And so now we can come back to the room from our imaginings and take a deep breath as we open our eyes. And maybe those are questions we can contemplate a little more this week and allow the images to arrive as we keep those subconscious suitcases open for just a little while longer. And I'm so glad that you shared that beautiful music lyric with me today, and I hope that it offers some interesting insight as we allow our subconscious mind to do whatever it might do this week. One interesting thing about this mythical place, Honali, there is a town on the north shore of Kauai called Honali. And we may know that Hawaii is regarded by many as an ancient energy of Mu or Lumeria, and dragons are often associated as beings living in the age of Lumeria. So that's just maybe a little something to help your contemplation if you'd like. But now, friends, it's time for me to go home, and I'm so very glad that we were together this afternoon. Let's meet back on the playground next week as we welcome Easter celebrations coming in. And thank you so much, BBS, for being on the playground with us today. We love you, BBS, with all our hearts. And until next time, everyone.
Time to head home, friends. Thanks for being a part of today's journey. We'll see you back on the playground next Sunday at 1 p.m. Central Time on bbsradio.com. Make sure to subscribe if you enjoyed the show. Find us on Telegram and X to share your insights on topics today. Your input heals the child in us all.